Proverbs chapter 10, beginning of Proverbs chapter 10, we have a section of the book that really just presents to us a number of different proverbs, almost, I don't want to use the word random, but they're not always connected. It seems like up until this point, we've had some pretty good connection as we're able to, at times to deal with chapter at a time with an overall theme. I've tried to look at this chapter and at least glean a central thought that we could put our thoughts, wrap our thoughts around. And I think if you read this chapter, you'll see an emphasis upon the long-term effect of righteousness and wickedness, or the long-term effect of wisdom and folly. You've heard me talk about taking the long look, and when I did so, I quoted Dr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson was the president of the college where I had the privilege of attending, and 4 days a week, generally, he would teach in chapel, speak in chapel, and more than not, he would speak from the Proverbs. He would just have a little New Testament with Proverbs, and he'd open that little New Testament and hold it and begin to talk about the Proverbs. And it was like he was taking one layer off of a proverb at a time and delving into the depths of the application and meaning of it. But one of the things he said often was to take the long look, and I've tried to remember that. To look at the long effect of anything when you're making decisions. Not to merely look at the moment, but to look at what are going to be the long-term results or ramifications of what we do. And wickedness and righteousness both have long-term effects. And in this book, wickedness is tied to folly or foolishness, and righteousness and wisdom are tied together. And it's important to look long, to look beyond the moment. A wise person always does this. A fool tends to look at the present moment, and without considering the consequences or action. A way to think about it is to think about a child. A child has no understanding of the dangers around it. A child can be playing, and maybe it's on a bed or a couch, and has no thought about falling off that bed into the wall, into furniture, and they'll rough house. Sometimes they're in our bedroom, the kids get up there, and I know you're not supposed to do this in the house, but they play football on the bed. And I'm sitting there in my little corner, you know, and they're up there, and I'm thinking, my goodness, we're going to the hospital tonight. And you say, why didn't you stop it? Well, it's just the first quarter, and it was trying to let it go a little bit. But a child doesn't think about those things. All it really thinks about is the moment. And the wise person is a maturing person. And the maturing person, one of the things he thinks about is long-term effects of his decision. What does he do? How does it affect him over a period of time, or others over a period of time? And so I illustrate that with a child. And he really begins this proverb by emphasizing the child parent relationship and the effect that a child has upon the parent. And that is one of the things that we ought to consider. The Proverbs of Solomon: a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. I think about this very week because of a speech I saw, a clip I saw on the radio of old George Bush speaking at a thing for his son Jeb. Did any of y'all see that, where he broke down? He was talking and he couldn't speak. And here was the former president of the United States, so caught up. His son had been the governor of Florida 2 terms. And he talked about the sadness of when he first ran for office and he lost. And they chose, how he put it, they chose to rehire the old governor. But then he broke down as he began to speak of Jeb. In fact, Jeb then had to go up there to the platform and Old George Bush Sr. was telling him, I can do this, I can finish this. But it was a father who was absorbed in this thing, caught up in it, the emotions of it. And here is the effect. He says that foolish children have, or wise children have, upon their parents. How he puts it, he makes a father rejoice. That's the idea of a glad father. And he makes the heaviness of his mother. And then look at verse 2 and 3. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but casteth away the substance of the wicked. And he tells us here, in wickedness there is no profit, while in righteousness you'll find deliverance from death. The Lord doesn't allow the righteous to famish. He takes care of them. But he casteth away the substance of the wicked. The long-term effect of righteousness and wickedness here. Now, nobody's questioning that there's short-term gain in wickedness. The proverb isn't saying that. You know people that are involved, their whole life is involved in wickedness, and it seems like they prosper. In fact, it's the question the psalmist asked. There, I think it's Psalm 73. He's looking at the wicked, and he don't understand that the wicked seems to prosper. But then he says, then I went into the sanctuary, and I understood the wicked's end, and how foolish I was, he says, to have looked at the wicked, to have watched his life, instead of looking to God and living my life accordingly. But he's talking about long term. Treasures of wickedness, they profit nothing in the end. In the end, the righteous is delivered from death. In the end, God sees that the righteous does not famish. And in the end, he takes away the substance of the wicked. Sometimes this doesn't happen until after a man's gone, like Voltaire. Voltaire was a very evil and wicked man. He wrote his books against Christ and against God, against truth. He was an infidel, an unbeliever. And then when he was gone, he thought the Bible would be obsolete with just a matter of a short years. But really, in a matter of short years, they turned his Bible, or his home, into a place where the Bible was printed and produced. And Voltaire was dead and gone, and all but forgotten. But his things had been taken and given to the righteous. And that's it happens often in this life, but if not, this life is short term. It's short term gain in the end. That's what he's teaching. There's no lasting profit. There's no final profit. And then finally, all of us reach the bottom line of life. That's the point. And you get to the bottom line. And where does wickedness lead you? You can, as a rule, wicked people don't live as long as righteous people. That tends to be a rule. And even they glorify the old crooks and thieves and robbers of the old West, you know, in these movies. But most of those guys live very short lives. They live their lives, and just like the gangsters of the first part of this century, we like to glorify the Al Capones and the others like them. But most of them live very short lives. Al Capone spent his years in prison and died a very unprofitable life. You see that. I told you the other day, I'd like to read the page in Time magazine where it lists the people that die. The big people that die. It doesn't matter how long they live, but the fact is they're on that page and they're gone. The long term. Well, notice, then he emphasizes this matter of laziness and diligence, the long-term result of that. Look at verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand. There's a term we use. We talk about a slacker, a lazy person. But the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in Summer is a wise son, and he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causes shame. Here he's talking about laziness. He's talking about the sluggard again, one of the themes of Proverbs. Remember, Proverbs is talking about how to live life wisely, how to be a wise person in this life. And now here's a practical aspect of wisdom, and it's the matter of diligence. The Bible teaches us that whatever we do, we're to do it with all of our might, to do it with all of our energy, to do it with all that we can do it with. And here, the poor, the person with a slack hand becomes poor. Laziness and poverty go together. And if you follow Christ long, you're going to feel a conviction to work. Because God has designed it that way. That's as much righteousness as any other aspect of righteousness. God will lead you, but not only that, but how you work. A person that follows Christ will do diligent work. He may not be the best at what he does, but he's going to do the best he can do. It becomes a moral thing to do the best you can do. But the long-term result is it does tend to make rich. I think we are very careful about the prosperity gospel because it's a complete wrong emphasis. The idea that you give God a dime and he'll give you a dollar. You give him a dollar and he'll give you 10. You hear all that nonsense on TV. And people living exorbitant lives on the gospel of Jesus Christ. I talked about that Sunday night here. We talked about selling what we have and putting into that context of the barn-building fool who, when he prospered, rather than thinking of others, he just thought of himself. That's what's going on so much with the prosperity gospel. People living in multi-million dollar homes on money they begged from widows and old people and such as that. Well, that's the prosperity gospel, so we reject that out of hand. But at the same time, we all understand that if you work hard and you're diligent, the natural outcome of that long term is going to be prosperity. And if you do it over a long period of time, you're going to see a tremendous result of that. The Bible doesn't deny that at all. But that's not the same as prosperity gospel. The blessing of the Lord, as he speaks of, makes a man rich. But that's not the prosperity gospel as we find it being taught today. Here is the principle that laziness leads to poverty and diligence leads to riches. And the emphasis upon this wise man is in the summer, he's working there, and the other man is sleeping. He's sleeping during the harvest. When he ought to be gathering it in, he's sleeping. And there's a time in our lives, you know, the Bible talks about carrying the yoke or bearing the yoke when you're young. There's a time in our lives when we can do more than we can at other times, and we ought to work hard in those times. But here is the long-term result of laziness is poverty. The long-term result of diligence is prosperity, blessing. And then he goes on to talk about the memory of the just. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. The wise man in his heart will receive commandments, but a prating fool or a babbling fool shall fall. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely, but he that perverteth his ways shall be known. I read down through all these verses. Because in verse 7, he says, the memory of the just is blessed. But in the end of verse 9, he that perverted his ways shall be known. Sooner or later, it comes out. The wicked are known. I've tried to emphasize that and think about that in my own life. But to emphasize that to all of us. Because if every one of us knew our actions would be known, we'd be much more careful about our actions, wouldn't we? if we believe that. But have you ever known people that look better going than coming? Have you? You sure you have. They just look better going than coming. It's like the king in the Bible. Can't think of his name right now. But the Bible says he left without being desired. In other words, they didn't have much of a funeral for him. They didn't have much of a memorial service for him. Nobody was really hurt to see him go. There's a lot of folks that have left this world like that. You can say what you want. It was a blessing to somebody. They left without being desired. They left and nobody cared. But he says the memory of the just is blessed. That when you think about it, that's the long-term result of when you look at the person who does right. When people remember that person, they think about him and what a blessed memory they have. I like to get along and think about people I've known like that. I like to talk sometimes with folks about people I've known like that. And it's wonderful to know them. I've known some people to die. And I said, you know, I wish his wife had died instead of him. I wish somebody else had died instead of him. His brother died instead of him. Have you ever thought that way? I know that's a carnal way to think and a wicked way to think. But you lose somebody and they're a good friend to you. And you enjoy their company. And all of a sudden they're gone. And you think, my goodness, I can think of 20 people I'd rather see go than that person. You know? They just... And then on the other side... People go and you say, boy, isn't the community going to be better off? The community's better off now. That person's gone. And we don't talk like that, but within our thoughts, sometimes we think it maybe. But the memory, the remembrance of the righteous is a blessed remembrance. And I have a lot of treasured memories of people who affected my life. And I think about them. I think of men and women that were righteous and good people, moral people. And I look back and it's often a treasure to me to realize that. Well, the wicked, he says, they'll be made known. They'll be made known. Notice what he says in verse 8, the wise in heart will receive commandments. That's the mark of a wise man. You can tell him something. You ever known people you can't tell anything to? Every one of us have worked with people. I don't care what you can't tell them anything. You know, my dad worked with a guy one time like that. You couldn't tell him anything, and he knew more than everybody, and that kind of person. My dad loved to tell it because they were working in a bunch of mud. And the guy said, I'm going to have to go get my rubbers on. And he went out to the truck and he brought a pair of rubbers that go over his shoes about that tall. And he walked out through there and stepped off in mud that deep. Knee deep. And my dad said to the boss, he said, boy, it's a good thing he went and got those rubbers on. The boss had no humor. He said, why? What good did they do? Well, there's some people you can't tell anything. You just got to let them learn by experience. You tell them the wire is hot, they got to touch the wire. You touch it, and then they get shocked, and everybody is fine. They learn for themselves. They go to the school experience every time. That's what he's saying. The wise in heart, they'll receive commandments. And he puts over against that, as the Proverbs often do in parallel, the babbler. The prating fool. The word prating is just the idea of a babbler. And a babbler is an idea, the idea of a babbler is the idea of a man who speaks without reasoning or thinking out what he says. He doesn't give thought. His mouth works faster than his mind does. I think we've all had that trouble at some time in our life. But he's a babbler. But he'll in the end fall. See, the wise listens. A babbler, he's too busy talking. He won't listen. He doesn't reason out what he says. And it's hard to talk to him. It's like they said, three preachers standing around. If every time you see three preachers standing around, one talking, the other two waiting their turn. But you met people, you know, all the time you're talking, they're not listening to you. They're just waiting, and boy, they cut in, and you just forget whatever you was going to say. We've all done that, I suppose. But that's a prating fool, a babbler. Whereas the other person, he's ready to listen. You see what I'm saying? You have the one, the top man, the wise in heart, he'll receive. That is, he'll listen to what somebody says. On the other side, you have this guy, he's the talker. You have listeners and talkers. And so it's the babbler. In the end, he'll fall. And now we look down in verse 10. He that winketh with the eye causes sorrow. But a babbling prating fool. Verse 10 is saying the same thing. Prating fool again. A prating fool. I've just talked about a prating fool. Verse 8. The Proverbs do this. They'll repeat themselves on something. But he that winketh with his eye causes sorrow. The idea of winking with the eye is a deceitful person. He's a deceiver. He talks, but you got to watch his eyes because he's shifty. Well, when you're conscious of somebody's eyes are shifty, you be careful. Don't listen to him. Watch him. And here is the deceiver with his eye. He'll bring sorrow. That's the result of deceit, his deceit. And the babbling fool shall fall again. The mouth of the righteous man is a well of life, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. Again, what you have is a parallelism here. The righteous and the wicked. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life. The mouth of the righteous, when you listen to them, it tends to life. And it's a little question, actually, how the latter part of this verse should be translated. Whether the idea is that the wicked tries to cover up his violence. That's one way of looking at this. In fact, I think this is one of those terms that we saw above too. We didn't say anything about it at the time. Verse 6. This is repeated almost word for word. Verse 6 and verse 11. You see the last part of verse 6. But violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. In verse 11, but violence covereth the mouth of the wicked. And I can say, according to how you translate this verse, I think if you look at the New American Standard Bible, for instance, which tends to be very literal in its translation, in fact, rigidly literal at times, you'll get the idea that the mouth of the wicked is covering up his violence. In other words, the righteous speaks and it has a profitable effect, leads to life. But the wicked, he speaks, but he's actually covering up his real intent, what he's doing. I think it's also clear, it's true if you take this and look at it, that the mouth of the wicked, where the mouth of the righteous leads to life, it's a well of life, the mouth of the wicked leads to violence or evil. The effect is evil. That's true also. Look at verse 12. By the way, when you talk about translation, I'm very sensitive to that whole issue. But the Proverbs especially, Proverbs are difficult. Sometimes they're purposely difficult. We'll see some that they're said in such a way that you have to give thought to what is the person trying to communicate. And you can take some of the Proverbs, we'll see them later in this book. I heard a man do it once. He took a proverb that could have, possibly have three meanings. And that was his sermon. His sermon was, we can look at this proverb and it could mean this and develop that thought. Or we look back at it, it could mean this. Now, it means one of the three, or maybe something completely different. But the proverb was put like it was purposely so that it would cause you to have to pause. Proverbs at times are dark sayings. There's depths of thought to them. Like I just mentioned a possible two different ways of looking at this text, and that goes to how you translate it. And I know we say, well, we have the King James Bible, and that's the final translation. Only those who believe that believe that. Because almost, and by the way, that is a small group that believes that. Because most everybody understands the Bible was written in Hebrew, not English. Now, I'm talking about the Old Testament. And the New Testament was written in Greek, not English. And what happens is you translate from that language. See, there are men who have the ability, watch, and they do this. I think Zahidis, is that how you say his name? Zodiatus. He preaches from a Greek New Testament. So when he stands in the pulpit and he opens to preach, I've been told this, I don't know this for certain, Glenn told me this, I think it was. He's actually preaching from the Greek New Testament, not the King James, not the New King James, not the New American Standard, not the Revised Standard, not the American Standard of whatever, NIV. And I don't know how the KJV only people would deal with him. Because he's looking at the original Greek language that is translated into. There's very few people could ever do that. But translation, when all is said and done, is a very difficult thing. And because a word, even in our language, we use synonyms. And a synonym you have two words that mean basically the same thing, but the reason they're two different words is there is a difference between those two words. And so you have a translation where you could take one word and the other word, and both of them could be right, but one of them's better. So you get into translation. Well, with the Proverbs, at times, there's a real question as to how that Hebrew should be translated. It's like, let me just give you the word Jehovah. You're hearing now a great deal that God's name is Yahweh. Have you all heard that? Yahweh or Jehovah. Now, the reality is that we don't know that. I mean, that's not been proven. As far as I understand, it's not been proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that that's how you should translate or understand his name, because they didn't write the vowels and they didn't pronounce the name because the name was so sacred to them, they wouldn't do so. So when it comes to translating our Bible, we just put the word Lord with capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D in the King James Bible and other Bibles. Also, I think they follow that. Or some of the newer Bibles just put the name there. Put the name Jehovah, and it makes the difference. Because there are different names there. Have you noticed that in your Bible? Sometimes Lord is capitalized, and sometimes it's not. And that represents, when it is capitalized, it represents that in the original language, there's a different word there. You see. Alright. So I just mentioned that because it is difficult. I find that the Proverbs are easier for me to read out of the New King James than they are the King James, because of just the difference in 250 years ago, Greek from 250 years, or English 250 years ago. The last time this was updated was 1769. And this is 2006, the end of 2006. So that's where the difficulty comes in. But where it says violence covereth the mouth of the wicked, that's one of those cases where you're looking at how should you best translate it. Now, verse 12, hatred stirreth up strifes, but love covereth all sins. There are some things that manifest attitudes. Remember, I was talking Sunday morning when we were talking about worm theology, that at one section of that sermon, I was talking about how to know your own heart. And I said during that segment of the sermon that your trials that you go through reveal your heart. And then I said temptation reveals your heart. The Bible says we're tempted when we're drawn away of our own lust. So when I'm tempted to something, that's a revelation of my heart. Then my words reveal my heart, because from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. And then we talked about the cross. If you want to see man as he really is, you look at the cross. I have preached in the past a message on how to know your own heart, and I've developed that a little bit further. I've preached it here. I know I've preached it somewhere else a time or two too. But I think one of the most important things is these teachings in the Bible that help us to see inside ourselves. It's very easy to see what's wrong with someone else. It's very easy to spot what others need to change. In fact, I can tell you, but you could tell me. But the reality is, the Bible doesn't leave us a place for that. The Bible says, who are you to judge another man's servant? The Bible teaches us that we should worry about the beam in our own eye before we try to get the speck out of someone else's eye. And if all of us could ever come to a place where we say what I've heard Brother Glenn say so many times, somebody asks Glenn something, and he'll say, well, that's none of my business. That cuts the conversation off pretty quick, doesn't it? Have you ever heard him say that? Somebody starts to say, oh, that's none of my business. And I've learned from that. I haven't learned it well enough. There's enough carnality in me, I want to at least hear it to know whether it's my business or not. I don't want to make that judgment till I've heard. You know what I'm saying. But the bottom line is that every one of us should be concerned about ourselves. And there are indicators in the Bible that help us to see into ourselves. Here's one right here in this verse. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. People who want to stir up, that's a manifestation of hatred. People who want to stir up problems. You know people like this, and you may be like this. I know from a leadership standpoint, man, I want to put water on fires. I want to put them out. I don't want anybody fueling the fire. You know, Dr. Johnson used to tell us, he said, your business as a pastor, your business as a leader is to keep people together. I thought that's a pretty good rule for a pastor. Keep people on the same team. Keep them together. In other words, he knew the problem is just like families. When you start intermarrying sister-in-laws and brother-in-laws, and everybody's got their own ideas, if everybody doesn't mind their own business, you got problems. You know that's true, especially in the day of a telephone. And you'll want, I'll guarantee you, if you once your family gets a certain size, you will want to put out the fires. My mother, I know this, she hated When anybody sowed discord in our family, she just, she would say, if I heard her quoted any one verse she knew from her heart, is that God hates seven things. And the one of them is he that soweth discord among the brethren. I've heard her quote that. If you were going to say anything about anybody in the family, she'd say, hold it. God hates he that sows discord among the brethren. She's quoted that to me a time or two. I know she knew that verse. But you know, now I've got a pretty good sized family and I feel the same way. But I especially feel it with the church too. It's easy, you know, to work together. We got to work together. And boy, there's no question. We always do, all of us do things we ought not do. Isn't that true? We all say things we ought not say. That's the fact of it is. I think sometimes it's a real burden to me because I stand here and preach so many times. When you speak as much as I do publicly, you're going to misstate things that if you're asked about it, you could say, you know, I didn't mean that at all. That was a complete misstatement. I've had people ask me about something. I said, you know, I never thought about that. It never crossed my mind. They said, you're preaching to me. You know, honestly, I never thought about it. It never, and I wish I could always say I never, nothing ever crosses my mind. But I feel like, you know, when you're speaking, because the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. And I think you're up here on all this, you know, you've got that more opportunity, but the Bible says this, cast out the scorner, and I think it's something like the fire goes out or put him out. We'll see that in the Proverbs here. But here he's saying, hatred stirs up strife. See? Now, next time you watch the news, just realize, mark those people. They're full of venom and hatred. Now, I read all kind of news. But I get frustrated, as I've told you. I get frustrated watching people tear down, and I realize they just love strife. Have you ever noticed that news people love strife? They love to stir it up. Boy, today they've had a heyday. The report came out on Iraq, and boy, they're just... Bad news is they love it. They love it. But it happens in families. It happens on jobs. There are people in businesses, in factories I'm thinking about, that, you know, you have factories. And I know the last public work I worked, there was 2,000 people on this job building this building at one point. But within that, you were always within a group of 10 or 15. You had a team, and we were iron workers. And even within a group like that, you'd have somebody always wanting to keep something stirred up. Instead of building the building, you think, let's just build it. See? And I know people that are involved in sports teams. That's the difficulty they have. Especially if you coach the Dallas Cowboys. Terrell Owens is about impossible to coach. He just keeps things stirred up. He's done it almost everywhere he's been. Now look at that verse. You want to know, when I want to stir it up, what I need to realize is the reason I want to do that is there's hatred in me. Now, again, we can all know what's in everybody else. We see that. But the problem is, we don't see ourselves. And the only person we can change is ourselves. And every one of us, every one of us in this room tonight should want to change ourselves. I feel like, having visited with Brainerd for so long now and watched him weep over what he was, I'm thinking, I want to know that about myself, because it led to great results in his life. And how can I know my own heart? Well, if I listen to myself speak, I see my heart. If I realize my temptations, I see my heart. When God allows me to go through the trials to see just who I am, I see myself. And when I want strife, watch. What it's revealing is there's hatred in me. Hatred stirs up strife. Love covereth all sin. Now, watch, you know this is true. Those that we love, we overlook things in them that we will not overlook in others. If I like somebody, I put up with things with him or her that with others I say, oh, I just can't be around that. You know that's true. We do that. And actually our friends sometimes are more corrupt than those people that we are bothered with. But we love them. And it overlooks that. It covers that. Well, where a person is walking in love, I don't want to say they're overly optimistic, but they do try to see the best in people. You read 1 Corinthians 13, just that description of love that's there in that passage, you're familiar with it. Love suffers long. It's very patient. Verse 4. Love is very kind. Love envies not. Love does not vaunt itself or is not puffed up. It's not about itself. It does not behave unseemly, that is, unbecomingly. Seeks not her own. Is not easily provoked. And there's the verse, the words. Thinketh no evil. Rejoiceth not in iniquity. Love is not happy to hear bad things. But rejoiceth in the truth. Think about those things. So here you have hatred stirreth up strife. But love, it covers sins. Anybody can start a fight. Any fool can start a squabble. It takes more effort to get along with people. It's especially true in families and anyway, we move on. In the lips of him that understandeth, wisdom is found. But a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. For the foolish person, a rod is for his back. Wise men, look at verse 14, lay up knowledge. But the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Wise men lay up knowledge. That is, they put it up. They're gathering knowledge. And they're always learning. They're taking it in. And there may come a day when you need it. And you've learned and it comes to your good. But the foolish man, rather than learning, he's headed toward destruction. He's near destruction. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. That's the trust in it. That's the danger of riches, one danger of riches. And the destruction of the poor is their poverty. By that, you know this is true. When you talk about this level of poverty, any crisis, a flat tire, you've known people flat tire will bankrupt them. Now that's the poverty he's talking about. And the whole context, I think you have to look at, even follow through, the lazy man's poor and he hasn't. And here's this, the destruction that comes to the poor because of their poverty. I guess we've all known what it is to not have a dollar to put in the gas tank, haven't we? If you smoke, you probably know what it is to go to the ashtrays and pick up the butts. You don't have That's that level of poverty he's talking about. But riches is a man's strong city. Notice verse 16, the labor of the righteous tends to life, and the fruit of the wicked to sin. He that is in the way of life, he is in the way of life that keepeth instruction. But he that refuseth reproof erreth. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that uttereth a slander is a fool. And the multitudes of words that wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. I'm just picking out some of these verses. I'm passing over others. I know more so with this chapter. But with each one we could stay and dwell upon. But some of these things I would underscore for you. Underscore, he that uttereth a slander is a fool. He that uttereth a slander is a fool. And then underscore in verse 19, in the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin. People who talk all the time, there's going to be sin. God never intended us to talk all the time. You say, I just like to talk. Everybody has their own particular sin, and as soon as we own up to it, we can do something about it. But people aren't meant to talk all the time. In the multitude of words. I'm talking to me. I know this is true. I told you the other day, when I'm in my corner, I'm in that corner where I meet the Lord, and I do most of my studying, and it's quiet in that corner most of the time, and you can't believe it, but it is. I don't have the problems I have when I'm out. But you get with people and you've got to make conversation. What do you think? If you aren't careful, your conversation, there'll be sin in it. They say real intelligent people speak about ideas. Less intelligent people, they talk about things. People that aren't intelligent at all, they talk about people. There's a lot of truth to that, isn't it? I didn't say that. But I do know this. And I'm just talking about from my own experience. When you talk about preacher, what are the things? You talk about sin. This right here. I'm going to tell you something. When I find I've said things that I ought not have said, I discuss things. I'm going to tell you, I go home in a cloud of guilt. And I know, hey, I shouldn't have said that. I've had to go back and apologize to people. So, you know, I said something to you about something I shouldn't have said something about. I had no business talking about it. You ever had to do that? I don't like doing that. I don't like doing that. I don't like having to go back to somebody I said something to. I've had to do that. Walk up to somebody's door and knock on the door. They come out, they don't know whether you're there to fight or what, because the last time you spoke to them very direct. And you say, listen, I spoke to you in such a way I shouldn't have spoke to you. And I want you to forgive me. And I'm going to try not to let it happen again. I'm not saying I didn't mean what I said. No. Don't say that. But I'm telling you, I know that experience. I can just tell you that. I know that experience. And I'm sad to say that I know it more than once. And I've thought different times through my years, oh, I hate doing that. So it backed up. Be careful. Careful what you say. You want to tell that person off? You ever want to tell somebody off? Come on now. You want to tell somebody off. You be careful. Because you'll find yourself on their porch. It'll look you in the eye. And you'll say, I shouldn't have spoke to you that way. And the multitude of words. And he that uttereth the slander is a fool. course, in America, you get sued for it now. But in the multitude of words. And think about the long-term repercussions of words. You can slander somebody and the long-term effect that has upon their what people think about them. Long-term effect of what you say. But you watch this. We always think of old women and gossips. I don't know why we do. But we do. I think of people that stay on the phone all the time. And not everybody that's on the phone all the time is a gossip. I know that. But I do know this. In the multitude of words, there'll be sin. And it's sin just like anything else is sin. And so we listen to the Proverbs. The wise person watches his words. How to live life wisely? Take hold of yourself. Look in your own heart. And then watch your own words. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the words tonight that are given to us here in the Proverbs.